Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is Sally O'Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. I am running for Public Advocate of New York City to ban vaccines in 2013. I have approached legislators to ban vaccines for three reasons. One, the ingredients, all of which are toxic. Two, the diseases that result from the ingredients. And three, the intent to cause the diseases that result. So any one of those reasons is sufficient, or all three together, and I have stated as much to all the legislators I have gone out to with this proposed legislation, Ban Vaccines 2013. Now, I have written legislation back in 2009 called All Vaccines Are Banned. I went out many times to Representative Carolyn Maloney, and I know it got forwarded to her legislative person, and at the time I did not have the facts. I didn't have the ingredients, nor the diseases, nor the intent. But once I found the intent as of 2012 to cause the diseases they claim to prevent, I thought just nothing is stopping us now, and there's no reason we should not be banning them this year, 2013. So there are many situations that have arisen since. The first is that once the legislators have been warned that these vaccines are causing diseases, they are then accountable to take action to protect us. And we should go to our state legislators, according to Andrew Baker's article called The Vaccine Hoax is Over. He says that you must go to your state legislators and demand that the CDC vaccine schedule be canceled as well as the pandemic laws. He also then suggests that you go out to all government officials, be they healthcare workers or be they police officers, and anybody who might be required to inoculate you in case of pandemic, to warn them that they have a healthkeeper's, they have an oath to uphold not to harm you. So knowing the intent to cause disease, they would then know that that would be harmful and not to harm you. So it's not just the legislators you have to go out to and demand the CDC schedule be canceled, but also the healthcare workers and police personnel and people who might be charged with this duty of forced inoculation in case of pandemic. Okay, so let's see what else. Oh, yes, I also read that the CDC says that people who have been inoculated against disease will shed from that disease for up to 3 weeks. And this gentleman recommends that you go to your town hall meeting and you demand that people who have been inoculated, i.e. vaccinated, be quarantined for 3 weeks so that they do not spread disease. And this is what is coming forward in all these instances where there has been any kind of wild spreading of disease. It is post-inoculation. So we all have to do our part in stopping this charade, or as Andrew Baker says, this hoax. The hoax is over. So I'm waiting for Stuart Rhodes of the Oath Keepers to call in. And while I wait for him to call in, oh, by the way, there's a health worker's oath that Dr. Rima Labow of Health Freedom USA has created, and she basically modeled it on the Oath Keepers oath. So I will read you the Oath Keepers oath while I wait for Stuart Rhodes of the Oath Keepers, founder of the Oath Keepers, to call in. Okay, Oath Keepers orders we will not obey. 1, we will not obey orders to disarm the American people. 2, we will not obey orders to conduct warrantless searches of the American people. 3, we will not obey orders to detain American citizens as quote-unquote unlawful enemy combatants, or to subject them to military tribunals. 4, we will not obey orders to impose martial law or a state of emergency on a state. 5, we will not obey orders to invade and subjugate any state that asserts its sovereignty. I'm moving the page up. 6, we will not obey any order to blockade American cities, thus turning them into giant concentration camps. 7, we will not obey any order to force American citizens into any form of detention camps under any pretext. 8, we will not obey orders to assist or support the use of any foreign troops on U.S. soil against the American people to, quote-unquote, keep the people peace or to, quote-unquote, maintain control. 9, we will not obey any orders to confiscate the property of the American people, including food and other essential supplies. And 10, we will not obey any orders which infringe on the right of the people to free speech, to peaceably assemble, and to petition their government for a redress of grievances. So that's on oathkeepers.org/oath. And I am hoping my caller, Stuart Rhodes, will shortly call in. I just had a program, the last program I had, he was supposed to be my guest, and I had the wrong email address for him, but this time I had the right one, and I emailed him and called him twice today in the hopes that he would call in and share what is going on currently. The last time I spoke with him, he was in Washington, D.C., and I wanted to speak with him about what had transpired. I don't know if, like myself, I went to Washington, D.C. to ban vaccines 2013, and I found Washington, D.C. just absolutely overrun by security. This was astonishing to me. I used to live in Washington, D.C., and I have visited every single year since. So to see security, and only security most of the time, this is what's really startling, is that it just seems to be one big security town. And this was not the Washington, D.C. I remember. And Georgetown itself was completely quiet in the evening, and stores were closing early. And I might have been the only customer that came in all day. Or you could get a parking space anywhere in Georgetown. Tell me that, if you've been to Washington and if you've been to Georgetown, that is peculiar. So I would like to see Washington be a thriving place again. Certainly, it has got so many schools and so many students. Where were they? Even the people who beg for money, they were not there. I'm accustomed to walking down a block and at least being approached once when I lived in Washington, D.C., and there was a significant homeless population there. They're gone, too. Everybody's gone, so except security, which the place is completely run over with, as well as tourists. Where were the tourists? I was out during the day. So I'm interested to see what Stuart Rhodes' experience of Washington, D.C. was, if he, the week he was there, which was after the week I was there, if he experienced the same incredible lack of people, tourists and students. And I know I went to a place called Bull Feathers for lunch, which is a Capitol Hill lunch place. So that actually was brimming with people who work on Capitol Hill and probably lobbyists too. But that's the only place that had people, and it was during lunchtime on Capitol Hill itself. But other than that, when my husband and I were driving down one of these very large thoroughfares, as everything in Washington is very wide open and, you know, you can see the Capitol from everywhere. But what we found was we were the only people driving in the evening on Tuesday night who wasn't pulled over by the police. So we didn't see any cars actually moving. We saw cars pulled over, but we were the only ones moving. So it was very peculiar. And those of us who have been to D.C., and certainly those of us who have lived there, would be startled at the vacancy of regular people and the overwhelming amount of security. So I came home after that. Now, this, mind you, was after Boston, which I don't really even see as relevant in, you know, increasing security in Washington. However, it was after Boston when I was in Washington, and then I came home to New York, and the police were patrolling my street and my backyard. I mean, are you kidding? This is crazy. Now, that has subsided. I'm thrilled to tell you, even though these are nice fellows and I like them very much. Nonetheless, it was very peculiar to have that go down, and I feel that Boston was used as an excuse to over-patrol everybody. So I know the stories that I was hearing were that there were 3 robbers, and the next day I heard from someone else there were 18. So the whole thing seemed a bit suspicious in terms of what was being reported, and so I don't even know what to think about that. I know I did. They said there at one point there was a rapist, too. So I said, great, show me a sketch, you know, let's find this guy. So anyway, I'm hoping that my guest, Stuart Rhodes, will kindly call in. I certainly have done my level best to call his attention to the fact that I was looking forward to speaking with him today, and I'm glad that I had an opportunity to report on what it is the Oath Keepers, the orders they refuse to obey. But I have a lot of questions for him other than that. One of the questions I have for him is how to secure your community. Now, this is something I had heard him speak about previously. He had a laundry list of how to proceed one step after the next to secure your own community so that in an emergency, you were self-contained and you did not have to rely on outside forces for anything. It started by having a block party. Everybody should have a block party and get to know their neighbors and distribute information about patrolling your neighborhood, taking turns, everybody who lives there being the patrol, about food, where to buy it in bulk, or perhaps to grow it and barter with your neighbors. And where to buy it in bulk. That was an important issue that he had brought up. And recommendations as to what would be storable and just everything that you would have to do as a community to protect yourself and to survive any catastrophe. And I thought this is very wise information. And I went to the Oath Keepers website. And I did not find the list that he had represented. So I'm having him on the show, and I will then create the list in written form so that I can distribute it to everyone in my neighborhood and say, what do you say we do this? This sounded like a really good idea to me, and I did speak with my neighbors about it. And at the time, they were not concerned, but I think perhaps having our streets patrolled is something that is a wake-up call that nothing I could have said would have equaled, you see? So I think it might be time and they might come on board. So there are several other issues I had hoped to speak with Stuart Rhodes about. And one of them is I am currently working with a local legislator to nullify the NDAA provisions 1021 and 1022 from 2012. Now, these are the provisions that state that people can be absconded with without charge or trial indefinitely. And you don't even have to know who charged you, which kind of leaves it wide open in terms of does there need to be a formal charge. But what Stuart Rhodes had brought to my attention, which really is what motivated me to take this action, is that there is nothing in the NDAA that says that you have to be 18 years or older for this to apply to you. So if you can be disappeared with no formal charge or trial, here or abroad, that just screamed child trafficking to me. When he brought up the fact that you didn't need to be 18 years old. And this is something that I had worked with a local legislator on in terms of promoting his legislation so that American children would be treated as foreign children are when they're trafficked in this country. Foreign children who are trafficked into this country are treated as abused children. And American children were not. They did not have that protection. So a legislator by the name of William Scarborough had generated legislation, which last time I talked to him, I understand is now in 8 states. And this legislation basically says that if a child is arrested as a prostitute and is under 18 years old, to treat that child as an abused child. And I just thought it made perfect sense to me. Well, pardon me, please. When Stuart Rhodes said that you don't have to be 18 to have this sections 102.1 and 102.2 apply to you, I just, you know, I knew what the ramifications could be. And I went to state legislators and local. And local is where it took hold. And I'm looking forward to that being presented very shortly, because the final versions have been submitted. We've gone back and forth for about a year, and I left off with saying, okay, the latest version that the legal council, which is for the entire city council, by the way, the city council has jurisdiction over 8 million people in New York State. That's almost half of the population of New York State, which is 18 million. So to have a NDAA resolution would be very important. There is, however, something else that I gave to this legislative person who works for the councilwoman I'm working with. I gave him the Restoring Constitutional Governance, which is from a site called the Patriot Coalition, and my friends Jeff Lewis and Richard Fry work with them, as does Stuart Rhodes, I believe, as well. And basically, it is a very strong statement. So I said, we can either have a resolution saying that we believe these provisions to be wrong, and for all the constitutional reasons they are, or we can, or the councilwoman herself can submit this Restoring Constitutional Governance, which basically addresses all these issues. And if we just remind ourselves of what the Constitution stands for, we will not be nitpicking each and every little thing. So I kind of like that. I like the boldness of it. And I don't know which way she'll go. And either way is fine with me, because I was told that I was allowed to submit another resolution. I currently have four with this councilwoman. One is a resolution against the National Defense Authorization Act. Secondly is a resolution against drones over New York. Thirdly is a resolution to stop chemtrails. And fourthly, and most important, because, well, I consider it the most important, is to ban vaccines in 2013. There's nothing more important than that, because chemtrails are killing us slowly. Certainly they are, and they're affecting our food supply, our water supply, and our ability to breathe. But And many other things, actually, because there's aluminum, that component brings on Alzheimer's. So there are a myriad of reasons to say that chemtrails have got to go, and they're being sprayed all over the world. And we are financing this, I believe, with our tax dollars. I know that Congress has to approve the expenditure for this, so I am assuming they have to approve it because we're paying for it. And if not, then who is, you know? However, banning vaccines, of course, is right now, as we sit here, there are children being inoculated in hospitals, and they're dying, and nobody is allowed to report that their death is associated with the vaccines that we are giving these newborns. And a couple of years ago, there was a statistic that was brought to light by Representative Posey and Jessica Flau of the EducateForTheInjured.org. Her website, very good website. I have to really highly recommend that. I'll post it underneath in the comment area. I always embellish in the comment area everything that I refer to. So if there's anything that interests you that I'm speaking about during this, what is turned into a monologue, if there's anything of interest that I'm speaking about, I will post further information in the comment area. So if you don't see anything when you go to comments, just click on the word comment, and it should pop up. And if it doesn't, make a comment saying, I can't see it, and I'm interested to hear more about this issue. Okay? And that you would scroll down to the bottom of the page wherein the So let me see if Stuart is on. No, he's still not on. Lordy, lordy. Okay, I don't know what's going on. I hope he's okay if you want the truth, because I can't imagine that he would stand me up unless he had a really good reason, you know? So needless to say, I am hoping that he is fine. I do worry about people who take, you know, really important positions because they are make themselves a target in so doing. Certainly, I have made myself a target in taking the position to ban vaccines 2013, but there are certain things that are just so important, like keeping babies alive. So anyway, I was referring to this chart that shows that America gives the most vaccines and has the highest infant mortality rate, and the country with the lowest infant mortality rate gives the least vaccines during the first year of life. So that's 34th. What I just saw, that's 2 years old. So what I just saw the other day is an article saying we are number 68. We are number 68 of countries in terms of day of birth survival. Well, this is a staggering, staggering statistic that America is number 68 in the world in day of birth survival. It's not staggering when you know that these children are being inoculated the day they're born, and that when the child has seizures, runs a tremendously high fever, or dies, that they are not allowed to affiliate that reaction, that outcome, that incidental finding with the vaccine. So no one is ever arrested. I can't tell you how disturbing this is and how disturbed you should be. So if this gets you off the couch, right on, you know, please contact me, because we need as many people as possible taking a stand against the murder of our children. And there's no pretty way to state that, is there? It is what it is. So, as I say, I have many resolutions in the hopper as a citizen. And I recommend that if you do wish at the local level or the state level to create a resolution or a nullification at the state level, what you should do is start a citizen's petition. A citizen's petition as instructed to me by my friend Mary Joyce, who is just such a smart woman. She instructed me on how to proceed with a citizen's petition, and it is this way. You basically make up a sheet of paper with 10 names. You only need 10 names for a citizen's petition. Now, that may vary from state to state. I don't know. But basically, this is how I got an audience when I wanted to speak about nullifying the NDAA or creating a resolution against it. I had 10 people sign a petition with their name, their address, their phone number, and their signature. So those four things must be present for each and every person who signs your petition. And I did it for the state to nullify. But I also said people can use these same signatures to go locally and address their local legislators too. So this, you know, it's just an effective way of operating. You don't need to do this in order to approach your legislator. It just basically lets them know that you have a seriousness of purpose, and they basically cannot ignore, from what I understand, a citizen's petition. So that's, you know, you state what your purpose is to nullify the NDAA or to ban vaccines or whatever it is. And you proceed by making sure that 10 registered voters, that's another thing, these people have to be 10 registered voters who sign it. So you realize. Okay. Well, I still haven't heard from my friend and advisor, Stuart Rhodes. What he had said in regard to the NDAA is that we have to treat the disappearing of people as a kidnapping. This is really the way to go. Anybody who would be disappeared without a charge or trial indefinitely, well, what is that other than a kidnapping? Be it for an adult or a child, it's a kidnapping. And I thought that was a, you know, just very clear way of perceiving this. That's what it would be. So I may have a second caller, and I hope I do. I know that he wanted to call in to ask Stuart Rhodes questions, but he is an author, and so that'll be nice. If I can keep talking until he calls in, then we will have a conversation with him. But I'm so sorry that my friend Stuart Rhodes is not available today. I know that you were probably looking forward to this once I suggested he would be coming on. But let's see what else I would like to say about him while I've got you. Yes, we don't have the ability to elect the sheriff in New York. The sheriff is an appointed position here in New York, if you can believe it, which completely undermines the purpose of the sheriff, which is to stand with the people against any threat, including the government. So here in New York, our mayor appoints the sheriff, which is, you know, now the gentleman who may be calling in is going to explain how that's working in his town. He's from Denver, and he'll be speaking about how the sheriff does not have a ballot. There's no place on the ballot to vote for a sheriff, even though there are people representing themselves from the sheriff's department. So he's like, well, who do you work for if there's no sheriff and we can't elect him because it doesn't appear on the ballot? That's a really legitimate question, and it begs the question, is in fact that what's happening here in New York State? So I'm going to go back to the, I don't know which person this is, but I'm about to pick up.
This is Bert.
Hi, Bert. I'm so sorry that I know you were looking forward to asking Stuart Rhodes some questions, and he has not called in, so I hope he's okay. But at the same token, I know that you have, I was just speaking about the whole issue of a sheriff because I had called into a radio program that Stuart Rhodes was on and said, you know, I'd like to run for sheriff, but the sheriff in New York isn't appointed position by the mayor. And you suggested, and I said, so you suggested that that might not be factual. That indeed it might be a position that does not appear on the ballot and just is an open position.
Yeah, well, I mean, a sheriff is supposed to be a sheriff of the people, but what has happened is because everything in the corporate world, especially the government corporate world, what they have done is they mirror the things that happen here in the real world, and then they make a fictional version of it. It's just like someone making a caricature of yourself. The caricature is not you, but it could be said to be you. Like it depends on the point of view that you want to use. So in every created corporation, municipality, there is a mirror image of a sheriff. But the bottom line is, and this is the part that no sheriff can get away from, is every sheriff is in fact put in office by the vote of a real man or woman. And the same thing actually applies to all public officers. They were all put there based on the vote of a real man and woman, which makes them real people. Okay, and as real people, they have to deal with real people. But what happens is they only deal with you from a fictional point of view. They call you a person, which is a caricature of yourself. And in places like New York and like Denver and other cities across this land, they have, of course, all these cities are little corporations of their own, and they don't even bother creating the caricature of a real sheriff. They just don't have one. They have a police chief instead. And they put the title of sheriff on him just because it sounds good and gives them a little more respect for the people, or from the people. But they're not really sheriffs. They're not elected. They're appointed. And they're basically no more than a Walmart security guard. They're there to protect the interests of that particular corporation. And I mean, I've had face-to-face meeting with my particular sheriff, and he made it clear. He says, well, the common law position of the sheriff, meaning the real man, the real sheriff, he says, well, it's kind of basically a romantic view of what a sheriff is supposed to be, but my job is to enforce the statutes of the state. He didn't even mention the county, you know. So the county is also a fictional location, and people need to know that whenever they ask you to enter the county in any particular paperwork that you fill in, it's because they want to make sure that you are in the body politic, that you're a member of their body politic. So that's why they want to know what county you live in, because there is no such thing as a county. A county is just a division of a political body, and that is the county is the smallest political division of the United States. So when you say you live in a county, you're saying you live in a little subdivision, tiny, tiny subdivision from the District of Columbia. So you're not living in your state when you say you live in a county.
That's fascinating.
These are all basic points.
Well, when I circulate petitions, whenever I run for office, you write your name, your address, you sign it, and then you write what county you're in.
Exactly, because they want to know what political subdivision you live in so that they can then justify whatever it is they're about to do to you. Because whatever they're going to do to you is much worse than whatever benefit they give you. See, there's one very important point that people forget, is that every political body can only exist for your benefit. So if that public body is there to cause you harm, and by harm, I mean violating your unalienable rights, not your inalienable rights, but your unalienable rights, they cannot exist if they're violating your unalienable rights. That's just the bottom line. So how do they get away with violating your unalienable rights is the question that everybody needs to ask themselves. And it's actually a very simple answer. It's because they get you to act like one of their servants. So they turn the tables on you. They're supposed to be your servant, and then they get you to act like one of their servants. That's how they create a person out of you. And all those people that are concerned with prejudices, with discrimination, and all that kind of stuff, they don't realize that by participating in the political system, you're participating in the most prejudiced, the most discriminatory system you could ever participate in. Because by definition, a person is a rung on a ladder of different ranks. And the U.S. citizen happens to be at the very bottom of that ladder of ranks. You know, the lowest city employee is higher than you are as a citizen. So there's no pride in calling yourself a United States citizen unless you qualify what that term means. Because if you're calling yourself a citizen of the United States, which means that place that exists in the District of Columbia, you're basically so tiny that a pregnant ant can walk over you. And that's the sad truth.
Now, another thing that you had brought up to me, which I found interesting, and I would like you to explain this to our audience, if you will, before we move on to the book that you've written, Arms versus Firearms. But this issue, as you were saying, the most important position you can run for in political office is what? It is the court clerk?
It's actually the sheriff. The sheriff is the highest officer on your land. And there's, actually I'm going to do another show and another program where we're going to discuss the marriage of the sheriff and the court clerk. Those are two very important positions. They're actually the two most powerful positions in the, you know, on the land, because the sheriff keeps the peace, and then the court clerk assures you an access to the court so you can settle your problem peacefully. See, without you having a forum to resolve your problems peacefully, then that sheriff would be pretty busy keeping people from fighting with each other. You know, so it's in the sheriff's interest to make sure that the court clerk makes the court available to everybody. And right now the courts are designed so that you will not have access to, quote-unquote, justice. And, of course, you have to be very careful when you're communicating with these people because all these terms mean different things.
Hold on. Bert Aranguren, you will not have access to what? You will not have access to what?
To the courts, to justice.
Oh, okay. Okay, I thought you said, quote-unquote, something, and I missed what that word was.
Yeah, quote-unquote, justice.
Oh.
and, you know, and justice, according to them, means your ability or your right, your privilege, to be subdued or controlled by their regulation. That's their definition of justice. It's not what we think justice. You know, another slang way of saying it is justice means just us. Our just us system. That's their system. It's not ours. So whenever you are invited to enter a court of justice, you better be very careful what you're entering into, because it could be a military court. I mean,
well,
that's getting into
I would like to ask you your take on the provisions 102.1 and 102.2 of the NDAA, if you would like to share something on that before we move on to your book.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure what it is that you're referring to there, so you'll have to highlight me there a little bit.
That's fine. But nonetheless, you were saying in terms of the court clerk, that would be the Third Circuit Court. I mean, what you would look to occupy what position? Would it be the Third Circuit or Superior Court?
Well, people need to become familiar with how the court system works. This whole system is based on our ignorance. The more ignorant we are, the more vulnerable we are. I always ask people, what is the most important reason for you to learn to read and write? And the most important reason is so that you can learn how to read and comprehend the law. And then to write is so that you can express yourself when you are being violated in court. That's the most important reason to learn to read and write. It's not to be able to read comics or read the newspaper, which is nothing but propaganda, is so that you can protect your rights. That's the most important reason to learn to read and write. And learning how the courts work is, of course, all these things are just little tiny steps. But there are, in every state, there are a series of courts. And there's all type of courts. People don't realize a lot of these courts are even military courts. But you have administrative courts, you have judicial courts, you have courts of justice. And all these courts are within other courts. But generally speaking, when people look at courts, you have the Supreme Court of the state, which is at the very top. Then you have the appellate court. Then you have the Superior Court or District Court or Circuit Court, which is the third one from the top. And then below that, you have county courts and you have city courts and so on, traffic courts. So the court you want to be always in is the third one from the top. It's either going to be called a Superior Court, a District Court, or a Circuit Court. And in that court, you have a court clerk. Okay? And that court clerk is the one who holds the keys to that court. The judges are pretty much irrelevant. People put way too much emphasis on the judges. And the judges are nobody. They're nobody. They're just a guy wearing a black robe that is out there, and I compare judges to, like, if you went to a McDonald's, and Ronald McDonald is the judge, and his job is to sit up there with a big black robe and throw a bunch of burgers at you and keep telling you, hey, look at me, pay attention to me. See, I'm the big bad guy up here. I'm the one who controls everything. Don't look at that prosecutor. Don't worry about the law. Don't worry about anything. Look at me. I'm the guy that you need to pay attention to. That's his job. And if you fall for it, well, you just lost, okay? And what the court clerk tries to do, and which is totally working under color of law and under fraud, is she tries to get you into an administrative court or a military-style court. But basically, her main job, of course, her unlawful main job, is to keep you from accessing the true court that operates under true law. The people are all mixed up. They're thinking that statute is the law. Statutes are not law. They're regulations. They're ordinances. They're no different than the regulations that McDonald's or Walmart uses to operate under. They don't apply to you. They only apply to you if you're an employee or a servant of the United States. If you're not, they don't apply to you. And that is such a huge concept for people.
Who would be a servant of the United States?
Who are the servants?
You're saying it only applies to you if you're something or a servant of the United States. Who would be classified as a servant of the United States?
Well, supposedly, supposed to be the number one servant are the elected officials, the people that you elect into office. Okay, those are the number one servant. And then those servants go into office and they do things that are supposed to protect your rights. That's their only purpose. All people you represent, you vote into office that are supposed to represent you, they only have one job, and that is to protect your rights. They have no other purpose there. Why would you elect someone into office to go over there and screw you, you know, to screw your rights, to violate you, to invade your home? No one would do that. So if you look at it logically, their only purpose is to protect your rights, to prevent other people from violating your rights. That's their only purpose. So the way they turn it around on you, go ahead.
Yeah.
What's that?
Conclude that thought because we have to talk about your book.
Oh. So basically the way they turn the thing around on you is they convert you into a servant of the servants by getting you to take on a Social Security number, by getting you to say that you're a citizen of the United States, by getting you to do all these things, and then they're able to make laws and regulations and apply them to you because now you're acting as one of their servants.
Now I'm going to ask you to explain in brief what arms versus firearms means. This is the name of your book and your ebook. Please proceed, Bert Aaron Gurith.
Okay. So, well, first of all, if someone wants to access it, they can go to my little website, which is, you have to type in the www.onlyfreemen.com, and I have different information there, and then I also have a YouTube channel, Do Not Consent 83, if they want to see some of the other stuff that I have in there. But anyway, yeah, I put this little booklet together because it was really getting on my nerves, the fact that so many good people with good heart are out there trying to stand up for the right to bear firearms. And they have no idea what they're asking for. Because only the servants that I was talking about are the only ones that have to deal with firearms. Because Congress, who are the servants, create the regulations. They create regulations for their employees. And their employees have no right as an employee to bear arms, which is what your Second Amendment says. So Congress has to restrict the ability of their employees to carry around an arm which could hurt someone, and they control it by creating regulations that control firearms or handguns or weapons. These are all made-up terms that Congress made up. They don't appear in the Bill of Rights. So when you look at the Second Amendment, you will not find those words, weapon, handgun, firearms, anywhere in there, because they have nothing to do with it. And you have the right to bear arms, which means to carry arms. And then if people further look into the Constitution, they will realize that the militia